liable to be punished by the same method, that is, 18 whips. The floggings by the British immediately stopped. In August of... Palestine be part...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, today, this evening, the first hour, we're going to have open lines on Wednesday. So if you'd like to call in, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, but I thought I'd just start out by trying to draw an analogy between what happened in Vietnam and what is going on in the Middle East today. And people say, oh, there's no similarity, and yet when you stop and think about it, there's so many similarities, but nobody ever talks about them. First of all, those of you who look into the background of how we got into Vietnam will remember the interview I have with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was immortalized in Oliver Stone's film, JFK, as the military officer who sat on the bench with Kevin Costner, who played the part of the crusading district attorney from New Orleans. But anyway, of course, in real life, Colonel Fletcher Prouty was the Pentagon's liaison to the Central Intelligence Agency, and it was Fletcher Prouty's opinion that there was a secret team working within the CIA that had killed President Kennedy, working certainly with other groups, and we've been able to verify that fairly well from a number of other interviews, including Madeleine Duncan Brown, who was at the dinner party the evening before the assassination, when, of course, Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover and representatives of the Mafia and John McCloy and Governor Connally and many other people were there. And, of course, Lyndon Johnson. And, of course, Madeleine Duncan Brown was Lyndon Johnson's mistress. And after the meeting, why, Johnson came out and whispered in her ear, well, after tomorrow, I won't have to worry about those Kennedy boys anymore. So we verified that the meeting was held from other sources. Galen Ross has talked to other people who were there. No question, the meeting, everything was solidified the night before the assassination of President Kennedy. Well, Fletcher Prouty, in the interview he did with me, and it's still available in our first JFK assassination four-tape set, Fletcher Prouty talked about how, following the Second World War, there were massive amounts of supplies on Okinawa that had been put there in preparation for the American invasion of Japan, as Japan hadn't surrendered. And half of those supplies were sent to Korea, in preparation for the Korean War, which they knew was coming, and the other half of those supplies was sent to Vietnam, to Ho Chi Minh, to use against the French so they could overthrow French colonial rule, and that, of course, was a prologue to America going to war over there. It was all planned ahead of time. All the wars are planned. Well, you sort of look and see what actually took place as far as Iraq and what's going on there, and you'll find out that we had financed the Mujahideen, we had financed Al-Qaeda. This is covered in a number of books that are available from Radio Liberty, if you'd like to get them. Unholy Wars by James Cooley, who was a foreign correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. The book was written, I believe, in the year 1999, Dollars for Terror, which, of course, was written in 1999. And the book we do carry today, we still have it, The Devil's Game. the United States financed this whole Islamic terrorist movement prior to the 9/11 attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan, this is Open Lines, and we're just going to give you the sort of the similarities between what happened in Vietnam and what happened, of course, is going on in Iraq today. Now, we went into Vietnam because, of course, of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And 58,000 American boys died because of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was a lie. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was all contrived. It ended up costing a million of South Vietnamese lives and 2 million North Vietnamese lives. But it was all contrived. The Gulf of Tonkin incident did not take place. In a similar manner, why we went into Afghanistan and went into Iraq because of what happened on 9/11. Do we really know what happened on 9/11? Somewhere between 40 and 50% of the American people already believe we've been lied to about that. And I would simply ask you to go onto the Internet and you can Google in the Building Number 7 videos and watch that Building 7 come down. That was a controlled demolition. There's no question it was a controlled demolition. And if it was a controlled demolition, then everything we've heard about 9/11 is a lie. And as the Gulf of Tonkin incident plunged us into a war in Vietnam, so 9/11 plunged us in first into a war with Afghanistan, and then into a war with Iraq, and of course, very obviously, the upcoming war with Iran. Well, one of these days I'm going to have to write this whole thing up, but we've got Gerald calling from Frisco, Texas, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So as long as we've got open lines Wednesday, let's go to Gerald. Hi, Gerald. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm well tonight. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Where's Frisco, Texas?
It's just north of Dallas.
All right, fine. We're good to have you with us, listening on shortwave or internet?
Internet.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
A question, actually. I understand that Garth Nicholson was on earlier in the week.
Yes, he was.
And he had some methods to improve lipids in the tissues?
Yes, he does. He was talking about the metabolic syndrome and that so many people who have these chronic infections like Lyme disease or chronic fatigue or chronic fibromyalgia have problems with their mitochondria and this affects the lipids and the lipid linings of the cells. And he does have a product which he has actually worked with. He didn't talk too much about it this last meeting, but it is a commercial product. He's worked with the people who have been using this in a controlled study, and he claims that between 40 and 50% of the people who take this have an improvement, or I think his statement was that they feel about 40% better by taking this. And it's a lipid product, and if you'd like to get more information on it, I can give you to my producer, and he will go ahead, take your name, and we'll call you with the product, the actual name, which I cannot at this moment remember.
One thing I would be interested in, I would like to do that also to get the information, but I wonder what the role of phosphatidylserine might be in his product. When he's on later in the week, could you ask him?
All right. Now, tell me again, what is the substance you're worried about?
Phosphatidylserine.
All right.
It's a non-essential amino acid. It helps build up the lipid bilayer.
All right. I will ask him, are you a chemist, or are you a doctor, or a pharmacist, or...
Well, actually, I have a doctorate in cognition and neuroscience from the University of Texas, Dallas.
All right, fine. Say, one thing I might suggest you do is go to Garth's website, and that is, of course, immed.org, I-M-M-E-D for the Institute of Molecular Medicine, they may actually list the product there. I'm not certain of that one way or the other, but... if you'd like to, we can certainly get the name of the product. We were looking into carrying it. We haven't decided whether we're going to or not. But we can get you the name of the product and tell you how to get in touch with it.
Well, thank you. I will do that.
All right, fine. I'm going to just put you on hold.
All right.
And my producer will come on here in just a moment. So hang on there, and I'm going to ask Kevin if you'd go ahead and get the name of this gentleman, and we'll go ahead from there. Well, here we are back again. We missed missed our break there. Got so interested in talking to our gentleman. Anyway, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And This is Open Lines Wednesday, and if you'd like to give us a call, why, go ahead. So I was just pointing out the similarities between Vietnam and what's going on. I was pointing out how the United States government provided massive amounts of military equipment for Ho Chi Minh, in the period immediately following the Second World War. This would be 46, 47, 48. Anybody would like to hear that fascinating interview we have with Fletcher Prouty, who's gone to be with the Lord, but certainly we still have this recording. It's one of the best interviews we ever did, not because I did a good interview, but because Colonel Fletcher Prouty was a fascinating man. I'm so pleased we had a chance to talk to him. Anyway, he pointed out how we funded, how we provided the military equipment that Ho Chi Minh used, of course, to battle the French, and then, of course, used initially against the South Vietnamese government. Later on, of course, why we know, of course, that Ho Chi Minh was getting his supplies from Russia primarily, and we were financing Russia. That is what most people don't understand. And anybody who has any question about that, you really need to get my interview with Professor Anthony Sutton, who is at Hoover Institute. Of course, they got rid of him because he was telling the truth. And Hoover is all right when it comes to conservative economics, but when it comes to concealing the history, they actually threatened Professor Sutton to silence him, and he has told me some wonderful stories about his experiences. As time and time again, powerful people tried to silence his study as he began to look into the background of the financing of Russia, creating the best enemy money could buy, and then, of course, the financing of the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. But this is covered in a video we have, my interview with him, called The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. And then a book we carry, we still have it called The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. It was his book. And you have to understand, we financed the Russians all during the Vietnam War so they could finance the North Vietnamese who were killing our boys in South Vietnam. In a similar manner today in the Middle East, why we're financing Afghanistan, pardon me, we're financing Pakistan, and Pakistan is financing the Taliban. Pakistan is financing Al-Qaeda that are killing our boys, first of all, in Afghanistan, and then in Iraq. And we justify financing Pakistan because if we weren't financing them, why, the wicked Islamic fundamentalists would take over the country, and that would be terrible. So we finance Musharraf, who allows, of course, the ISI, his intelligence agency, to finance the Taliban. And we just have to do this. Well, then, of course, we can... We've got Mike calling here from Santa Cruz, so let's go ahead to Mike. Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, hi, Stan. You were talking about Russia and our financing them. And when I was growing up, I'm 56, and so I was growing up in the 60s going to school, and we would have air raid drills, in case we came under a nuclear attack, you know. Where you go out in the hall and you put your head between your knees and... You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Well, this is all part of the propaganda that was being used at that time.
Yeah, and
we had to protect ourselves from the wicked Vietnamese, because if we weren't over there fighting, why, they would take all of Southeast Asia, and then New Zealand and Australia, and then the Philippines, and then San Francisco.
So I was just your average dumb kid. In my teen years and earlier, all through those years, we had air raid drills, and at the same time, I was at least smart enough to try and put two and two together, even though I couldn't do it. What I couldn't figure out was all the reports we kept hearing about sending wheat to Russia. Tons and tons and tons every year, all the time. We were always hearing reports about wheat going to Russia. And like I said, I couldn't make that compute, but at least I was smart enough to try. But now, decades have gone by, and... Well, it still doesn't make any sense.
Well, of course it does. We were creating the best enemy that money could buy. We had to have an enemy if we were going to rally the people behind the government. And the communist system really doesn't work very efficiently. And so as long as they had a communist system, they couldn't even feed their own people. So we had to feed them. And if we didn't have Russia, how would we rally the people behind the government and get them to be going along to work towards this world government that our leaders, the people who really control both of our political parties, want? So we have all always had an enemy. And whether it be Russia or whether it now be terrorism, these are all contrived enemies that were created. And it was Plato who said in his Republic, you know, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or treaty and there's nothing to fear from him, then he's always out creating a new enemy so he can rally the people behind him. That's what it's about.
Yeah, well, what did the great philosopher Pogo say? I have met the enemy and he is us.
I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah, so speaking of us, everybody should put a date on their calendar, October 5th. We're seeing what's forming up is massive demonstrations nationwide and around the world at U.S. capitals throughout the country and embassies.
These are massive anti-war demonstrations.
Anti-war, well, anti-everything you can imagine, mostly having to do with the Bush administration, and, of course, 9-1-1 seems to be the major focal point. Now, what's going to happen? If this is anything like the battle in Seattle, what's going to happen? I'm all for demonstrations, by the way, free speech and the right to assembly and all that. But this gets too much pressure, I think, from our own establishment, which these protesters are protesting against. And it seems they send in these ninja people behind the crowds, the masses of demonstrators, and create havoc. Now, the big danger is that if enough havoc is created, then martial law can be imposed. And
right,
everybody
for the listeners
who
don't remember the battle in Seattle, I mean, this was the classic example of dialectics where you control both sides, you have a controlled opposition. And I think it was a meeting of the International Monetary Fund or the
World.
Anyway, it was the International Finance. What was it?
World Trade Organization.
Anyway, of course, the left wing, the communists, the socialists, the environmentalists, everybody was there. And what people don't understand is the environmental movement, the communist movement, the socialist movement, the whole radical left movement has always been funded by our great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, our great corporations. It takes a lot of money to do that. And, of course, you want an opposition you can control. So they created this opposition, and they had all these people turn up there in Seattle. Of course, they were welcomed by the mayor, who gave orders to the police that they were not to intervene, they were not to try to stop the demonstrations. And then, of course, you got the people in the streets, and of course, they were going to demonstrate peacefully. And then came in the agent provocateurs. They were dressed in ninja suits, all black with masks on their faces. They started fires. They actually started breaking windows. And then things began to get out of hand, which is exactly what was planned. And then, of course, the police began using tear gas, and the people began throwing rocks. And you had a perfectly staged situation, and the average demonstrator had no idea how they were being used. And you're afraid that something like this will happen in this planned demonstration that's coming up all across America, indeed all across the world on October 5th. Who is organizing? Who's putting up the money? Why, the same people are pushing the war in Iraq, of course, and want us to go to war in Iran. And as the demonstrations get out of hand, it makes, of course, the pro-war people look so good and the anti-war people look so bad. That's exactly what they did during the Vietnamese War, too, where you actually had an anti-war movement that was financed by the people who were pushing the war, the controlled opposition.
Yeah. Well, this is state-instigated chaos for the benefit of the state through these demonstrations, the same as they're doing with 9-1-1. Nothing is beyond them. This is for their own benefit, and anybody planning on going to demonstrations is going to have to, you might as well figure that this is going to be done again, and you might as well just plan on looking for the ninjas, and you're going to have to either get out of there real quick. I'm not going to get involved in any of these. I've done a few things in the past, but this has gotten too weird now. You're going to have to either leave, and I don't see that happening if you've got 10,000 to 20,000 people out there in a large city. They're going to be there. The ninjas will come out. You're going to have to tackle them is what you're going to have to do, and drag them and flush them somewhere.
You better not, because anything you were to do,
yeah.
They don't want, of course, a peaceful resolution. They want violence. And
yeah.
That's why they stage these things. They can have them violent. They can have them peaceful. We saw 500,000 people got out by exactly the same forces in Los Angeles here on May Day, the day that communists celebrate all across the country. 500,000 of them are marching in Los Angeles and Chicago. On the other side, of course, has unlimited funds to organize demonstrations that they use to that they control for political purposes. Hey, hang on there.
Hey, let me hang on.
Just a minute, Mike. All right. Well, this is certainly Open Lines Wednesday. And, Mike, did you have anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, well, there's two websites I think people should visit. One is Indie Media, and you go to the Portland Indie Media site.
How do you spell that?
It's Portland, as in the city in Oregon.
All right.
And then dot Indie Media, IndyMedia. It's just Independent Media Center, Indie Media.
All right.
Dot org. So that's portland.indymedia.org, or just Google in Portland Indie Media. The other one is The World Can't Wait, and you just spell it out, world can't, without an apostrophe, wait.net. And just snoop around those two places a little bit, and you'll find the articles on October 5th.
And, of course, this is being coordinated all across the world. And until people understand that communism, since its inception in Russia, and the Communist Party, since its inception in America, has been funded by these same people of great wealth. And anybody who doubts that needs to read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, to hear how J.P. Morgan and his right-hand man, a man named Thomas Lamont, you know, were financing the communist and socialist movement in America. And recently, of course, Thomas Lamont's grandson, or great-grandson, Ned Lamont, won the Democratic primary for the Senate seat in Connecticut against Lieberman. That's Ned Lamont, who's either the grandson or great-grandson of Thomas Lamont.
Yeah.
Anything else, Mike?
Final comment. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. We even have Jane Fonda surfacing in the middle of all this.
And poor Jane, I think her heart is in the right place, but she sure doesn't understand anything going on. We really need to get her listening to Radio Liberty. Why don't you call her and tell her to?
I'm going to do that. We love Jane so much.
All right.
She's
God bless. Thanks so much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's go to Carlos, who's calling from Carson, California. Hi. How you doing?
Hey, Dr. Stand. It's been a while since I've talked to you. I was reading a book, The Devil's Game, by Robert Dreyfus.
Yes, isn't that a great...
fantastic book. I bought that through your outfit.
That's called The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus. And it goes into how the MI6, British intelligence, started funding this whole movement back in the 1870s. And of course, the United States CIA picked this up following the Second World War. Go ahead.
Yes, and it really gives a great overview how the Saudi royal family has been financing radical Islam. They set up the World Muslim League, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Our good friends in Saudi Arabia, right.
Exactly. And we've been in partnership with these people for the last 50 years. And
right.
In fact, I believe that the oil companies, this is my own belief, probably had an agreement with Saudi Arabia to finance radical Islam, envisioning the future impact that radical Islam would have, and that radical Islam would be used then as a force against Zionism and against Western capitalism, which is exactly what's happening now.
You're absolutely right. Go right ahead.
Part of the Hegelian dialectic. It's a beautiful example of it.
And it's so important, Carlos, that people understand the dialectic. You want to control both sides. And as long as you can do that, there is no opposition to you.
Exactly. But you know what worries me, Dr. Stan, is that I see a front forming in Latin America. I see Hugo Chavez forming a front with Fidel Castro, with Nicaragua, with Bolivia, Argentina, Brazil.
All right, hang on. We're going to hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Carlos. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Carlos Carling from Carson, California, and he's read a book that we offer, and I would recommend everybody get a copy of it while it's still in print. It's called The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus, going into how the United States Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and the Saudis have financed this whole radical movement, and Carlos can see this as an example of the dialectics. You control both sides. We work with the Saudis. The Saudis finance this Wahhabi movement. The CIA funds the Hamas, the CIA funds, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Jihad, various movements, and we even bring the radical Sheikh Ahmed Rahman, Omar Rahman, out of prison, and he's involved in preaching this radical form of Jihad. He's in prison in Egypt. He's been involved with the murder of Anwar Sadat. We not only get him out of prison, our CIA helps to bring him here into the United States. Why would you do something like that unintentionally? Why, we're creating the best enemy that American intelligence money could buy. But Collis was then talking about his concern about what's going on in South America, and he's already dealt with, of course, what's going on, and he can see very clearly what's going on in the Middle East and in the Near East as we create this Islamic enemy that now we can go to war with. But then Carlos is concerned about Hugo Chavez and how he is uniting all of South America, working in conjunction with Fidel Castro. Go ahead, pick the story up there, Carlos.
Well, they're forming a front and an alliance there of communist blocs, but the danger of it all is that they've also joined forces now. They've had meetings with several of the radical Islamic states, and they have formed an allegiance of mutual support. So obviously, we're being lured here to attack Iran, and once we attack Iran, eventually, all these other countries in Latin America, since they form an allegiance of mutual support, we're going to have to tackle them eventually also.
Yeah, but that is what it appears to be. Let me suggest something to you, Carlos, and that is that nothing is it appears to be. I mean, certainly Chavez, I believe, is playing a part. It was about 2 or 3 years ago when the good people of Venezuela overthrew Chavez and, of course, had the American government recognize the revolutionary government immediately. Why, they would, of course, that would have been the end of Hugo Chavez, and he would have been kept out of office. He would have had elections he couldn't control. But that wasn't the game. We did not support the people who overthrew Chavez at all. And then, of course, Chavez forms an alliance with Fidel Castro. But you have to understand that the United States State Department and CIA brought Fidel Castro to power. And if you haven't seen my video, The World Revolution, and you've seen my interview with the American ambassador to Cuba in 1958, the man who was instrumental in bringing Fidel Castro to power, and he will tell you, we knew he was a communist. There was no alternative to Fidel Castro. We knew he was a communist. We brought him to power. So why would we do something that stupid unintentionally? It wasn't unintentional. He was a very effective decoy, a very effective weapon, a very effective enemy. And we go into the background of the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs was fought to lose. We sent those men in there to die. We set them into the one spot in all of Cuba. There was no hope they could be successful because it was a thicket. There was one road off the Bay of Pigs beach, and that was past an army camp with 5,000 men in it. We did not give them military supplies. We did not knock out their air force. Our leaders knew exactly what they were doing, but we have to create the impression that Fidel Castro was the enemy. But, Carlos, if Fidel Castro is really the enemy, why did Bill Clinton and Genovino send a 125-man, heavily armed SWAT team to Miami to kidnap Ellen Gonzalez to send her back to Cuba to build up Fidel Castro's prestige?
Well, you know, basically, as you said it, communism in America is an experiment for the financial elite, and of course they want Fidel Castro there.
Right.
By the way, they would have gotten rid of him in a minute.
Sure.
But they want him there because it's an experiment that they're doing, using.
If you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, which we do carry and you can get through Radio Liberty, he will tell you his daughter spends a lot of time in Cuba. She's very close to Fidel Castro. They're really good friends. Why would David Rockefeller's daughter be such a good friend of Fidel Castro?
Well, because Fidel Castro is really a lackey for the financial elite.
You're absolutely right.
Which have formed all these different ideologies, communism, radical Islam, capitalism, Zionism. And they pit them one against the other. But my point that I wanted to make about Chavez and this coalition that they formed, they're forming this coalition with Iran because that's going to make the conflict even worse.
Yeah, but who brought the Ayatollahs to power back in Iran in 1979?
We did.
Our CIA.
That's right.
There is a cosmic script that's being enacted today. I Ahmadinejad looks like he came from central casting someplace. He's playing his part well. Chavez is playing his part well. Fidel Castro has always played his part well. I think we're in real trouble. I share your concern, Carlos.
Yes, and I...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, as you know, that Hugo Chavez yesterday, or maybe it was today, called the President of the United States the devil. Chavez is doing, is playing his part. If this is all showbiz, what do you understand is showbiz? It makes a lot of sense. Carlos, we got a full board, but do you have a couple of points you'd like to make before we let you go?
Yeah, real close. Chavez and Ahmadinejad in Iran, I believe, are still our CIA agents also. And like you said, they're playing a script.
Well, whether the CIA or whoever they're working for, I think they're putting out a great show.
Yes, exactly.
The only trouble is an awful lot of people are dying in this show. But of course, when the curtain goes down, they don't get up off the ground. And many, we're losing so many of our men and women over there. 100,000 Iraqis are dead. And it was all just sucks, just a mistake. I guess there really were no weapons of mass destruction there. Anyway, thanks very much for calling, Carlos.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye.
All right, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good tonight. I had two things I wanted to say, and the first thing was the legal counsel to Dick Cheney, his name is David Addington. He there's very few photographs of him that exist, you know, because he won't allow himself to be photographed, but the man is really the brains behind the more than 750 signed statements that the president has made over the past couple years. And his name is, I found out about it through because the New Yorker magazine had an article about him, and it was really very alarming that one man could be doing what he's doing. You know, they're actually subverting the Constitution, you know, with these signed statements.
You're right. Oh, you're talking about the president.
Yeah, the president signed statements.
He says, you know, I'm signing this legislation, but I'm not going to obey it. Right. Well, he's above the law. That is the way it is with any one of the elite. They don't. You and I are to obey the laws, but they don't.
Yeah.
And I share your concern about that, right?
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if you read the New Yorker, probably not, but I don't read it either. I don't have a subscription to it. But this article was very, very good. And it went into a lot of detail about Addington and his background. And
What issue is that in?
It's in the recent issue of New Yorker.
Is that Addington?
Addington. Addington. You know, as it's pronounced.
All right, fine. Well, we'll certainly see if we can get a hold of it. I like the New Yorkers because they actually publish Seymour Hersh's articles, which I find very, very insightful.
Yeah.
I canceled my subscription just because there was too much reading to be done. Hang on, we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Ray calling from Santa Cruz, talking about a recent article in the New Yorker magazine about a Mr. Addington, who apparently is Dick Cheney's attorney and has been actually writing these signing statements that the president has put forward. In other words, he signs a legislation that he signs, attaches a signing statement saying, this is the law of the land, but I will not obey it. I'm above the law. And that's what the signing statement in essence is. And this is a dangerous thing. I mean, the president is supposed to be the executive. He is supposed to carry out the directions of the legislative. But unfortunately, we're moving towards an imperial presidency. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Ray, did you have anything else you'd like to say?
Yes, I did. About the Kennedy assassination. There was a woman who was a witness to the shooting, and she went to the FBI because she heard five shots. She heard the five shots, and she saw smoke coming from behind the grassy knoll. She went to the police or the FBI, and they told her, said, you only heard three shots. You only heard three shots. That was one witness. There were several others that heard that saw the smoke and saw a man running behind that fence.
No, of course, but basically we carry it, but we don't carry it anymore. But Craig Roberts wrote it, and he lists, I think, 115 people who knew something about the assassination, who were all, in one way or another, eliminated, removed, exterminated.
Yeah.
So they actually killed a lot of people who knew what happened. They knew too much, including Dorothy Kilgallen and so many of the people who knew that the whole story was a lie. But think, Ray, you know, that was the murder of one man.
Yeah, right.
Think, you know, what the implications are for the American people, if the American people ever began to really understand that 911 was an inside job and we left those people there to die. Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying that George Bush knew anything at all about it. Intelligence operations are carried out independently. Simply the president says, I want something done. And they go ahead and do it, and they never tell the president, so he will have plausible denial.
Oh, Lordy.
But this is the way that it's done. And we actually have a book we carry entitled See No Evil, written by Robert Baer, who was a CIA agent for 25 years, and his book is the basis of George Clooney's movie Syriana, which doesn't follow the book very closely, incidentally, but there in the preface they quote one of the highest-ranking CIA officials who said, when the dust finally clears, the American people will realize that 911 was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph.
Yeah.
And isn't it amazing that nobody ever quotes that quotation?
Well,
now we carry the book, incidentally, See No Evil by Robert Baer. Go ahead.
I believe that the media is so tightly controlled, and I have to, the CIA probably has agents all over the place in the media, and they're probably doing all kinds of things to, you know, twist the facts and whatever they have to do to try to convince the American people that, oh, everything's all right, you know, we're moving ahead, you know, the economy's fine, and everything is not fine.
You're absolutely right. Well, our job, Ray, is to make people think and try to get them listening and then questioning and then learning. Carlos, obviously, who just called, has a tremendous insight into what's going on.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, but anyway, anything else? We got to let you go. We got some other calls.
That's about it. Yeah. Thanks, Dr.
Hey, thanks so very much for calling. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And calling from Spokane, Washington is one of our former producers of the program here who moved away. I guess he didn't like working with us. Anyway, Tony, how are you, Tony? Good to hear you from you.
Well, what do you mean I didn't like working for you?
I'm just joking. Go ahead. It's good to have you call in.
Well, I was just telling Kevin I'm going to be coming back for a few months so I can actually call screen a little bit.
All right, fine. We'll put you to work. We'll give you a post there as many Fridays as you come up. Good to see you again.
Oh, hey, I can be there next Friday.
All right, fine.
I'll tell you that right now.
All right, very good.
Yeah.
How's everything up there in Spokane?
Well, you know, the good and the bad. But I don't really want to talk about that right
all
now.
All right, fine. What would you like to talk about?
Well, you know, the whole 911 situation. You notice I've been real quiet about the whole thing.
I notice you have been.
I usually listen to you the next day off the internet. A lot of times I can't listen at night because I'm too busy. But I'm listening. But, I mean, I have my own opinion of this whole thing that I really haven't heard mentioned, at least not yet.
All right, fine. What's your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think there's getting to be a tremendous amount of exposure about all of the circumstances. I'm talking about, like, films like this Loose Change and Alex Jones and 911 in Plain Sight. And the media is making such a big deal to, like, ridicule anybody who believes that those things just might be true, that, you know, like a titanium motor isn't going to melt, that kerosene isn't going to do that. You know, it's just things like that about the Pentagon. People are really suspicious. So I'm kind of wondering if this is maybe a scenario that was done by Colonel House and Philip Drew Administrator, to where they're going to finally expose the truth at the end to start an armed revolt so they can come in and smash it.
All right, for our listener who doesn't know what Tony's referring to, Colonel House was the man who controlled both Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was an evil little man, but he had supernatural power. He was actually able to control the minds of these world leaders. And if you read anything about Colonel Woodrow Wilson, you always find the reference to Colonel House. Now, Colonel House in 1911 wrote a book called Philip Drew Administrator, and I held the original manuscript in my hand when I went through his papers back at Sterling Library at Yale University some years ago. But basically the theme was that there was this lieutenant colonel retired from the military named Philip Drew. And eventually the government became so corrupt that Philip Drew led an armed insurrection and took over control, overthrew the government. And what Tony is suggesting is, as this becomes increasingly obvious what's going on, and America becomes increasingly disillusioned with the establishment, they will come forward with perhaps a retired lieutenant colonel, like maybe like Oliver North, who will rally the troops behind him and, of course, overthrow the corrupt government and then use this new government to establish this one-world government that they always want. Incidentally, Oliver North is not one of my favorite people. He's part of the establishment. He betrayed America a long time ago. But, I've had exactly the same thing. In fact, I've always thought of Oliver North as perhaps being the Philip Drew of modern times.
Well, it really is starting to look to me like this whole 911 scenario is maybe that.
But I think the important thing is, of course, Tony, we need people to, first of all, get educated. And certainly an armed rebellion is the last thing that we want in the United
Absolutely.
States.
Absolutely. In fact,
That's
I was
exactly
telling my wife yesterday.
Beg pardon?
Oh, excuse me. I was telling my wife yesterday that we should all write letters to the newspapers and tell them to keep up the good job of never tell the truth under any circumstances about 911, because if the truth ever came out, there would be an armed revolt in this country, and then the government would smash it and set up a dictatorship. So just keep the people ignorant, keep lying about everything, and tell this to the newspaper. Just keep up the good job, because you're doing your patriotic duty by maintaining the peace and keeping people ignorant.
Well, I know you're saying that with tongue-in-cheek, and yet there's a certain element of truth in that. And the last thing we want is an armed rebellion, because that would give the establishment the justification for the dictatorship that they really want. And they've tried time and again to establish a dictatorship. They tried during the Roosevelt administration when, of course, they approached Major General Smedley Butler. And there's a book written about their effort. This was the Morgans, the Lamonts, the others, the plot to seize the White House. And it's a fascinating book. And there really was an organized effort at that time for revolt. There was an effort for a military revolt during the Nixon administration when he was facing being actually forced out of office. And he was going around to see if the military would back him with a takeover. Well, I will tell you right now, there are an awful lot of people in the military who are totally disillusioned with the current administration. There was a recent letter sent by 21 key government officials, many of them retired generals, saying what the president was doing in Iraq was totally wrong. And I think that there's a growing awareness in the military that things are corrupt, but they do not understand, Tony. They don't understand the control of our government, from the Council on Foreign Relations to the Trilateral Commission to the Bilderbergers to the Club of Rome, and then the occult organizations that really control this whole thing. They don't understand the spiritual forces that are involved. And God is not going to allow us ever again to be free until there's a revival in this country and until people turn back to Him. Because He's allowing these evil and wicked people who are associated with this demonic force, the occult hierarchy, to accomplish what they have. And until we're worthy of God's blessing, I fear for my crumpled country. As Thomas Jefferson had said so well, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and His justice will not sleep forever. And we may be seeing God's judgment on America.
I believe that the last couple of minutes there, that was said wonderfully, Dr. Stan.
Well, God bless you.
I mean, that was very, very good. I'd also mention that Major General Smedley Butler wrote another book called War is a Racket.
Right. In fact, we have the whole text of that is included in one of my newsletters.
Which kind of goes along with right what you were saying, because they use the military. In fact, Major General Butler basically said that the military is just an arm for the international banking interests.
Absolutely.
And that they're just there to collect debts and enforce policy.
And,
I mean, I didn't say it. He was a Major General.
Right, and that was Major General Smedley Butler. And if you go to I think it was probably last year sometime, I'll just have to take a look at the various newsletters we wrote. But we just took an entire newsletter and we reproduced War is a Racket. It was a speech that General Butler gave.
Oh, I did read that. That's great. But anyway, I'm pretty well convinced that this whole 911 is a Philip Drew thing. And I had a question. I was just listening out of like the corner of my ear the other day, and I heard something about a revolt at the like a television station in Hungary or something to that effect, where the people realized they had been lied to, and then so they had like a, I don't know, it's like a riot or something at the television or newspaper. Did you hear anything like that?
No, I really haven't heard that, but there are a lot of things I don't hear. So maybe you can find out what it is and let us know.
Well, if anybody heard that, I'd appreciate it. I believe it was in Hungary. And I believe it was on your network yesterday at another time. I wasn't paying attention that well.
No, I certainly don't recall it, but then, you know, sometimes I do get a little forgetful, too. Anyway, anything else, Tony?
No, but I'll see you next Friday.
All right, fine. We'll look for now. That's
have
a week
a
from
night.
This Friday.
Correct.
Not
week,
this Friday,
this Friday,
but a week from
not
Friday.
Not this one, the following, yes.
All right, we'll look forward to having it. Thanks very much.
I'll be there.
Bye-bye.
Have
okay, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Tony talked about a book called Philip Drew Administrator, written in 1911 by Colonel Edward Mandel House. And in that book, he tells how to establish a dictatorship in America, either through the electoral process or through, of course, armed rebellion. He gives the two alternatives in his story why a Lieutenant Colonel Philip Drew uses armed rebellion to bring about this wonderful utopian government and then sails away into the sunset and everybody lives happily ever after in this wonderful government that's been created. Of course, Colonel House was part and parcel of this whole world demonic movement, but we do carry his book. We think it's worthwhile. If you'd like to read Major General Smedley Butler's story of War is a Racket, it's August of 2005. That's August in 2005 newsletter. Incidentally, I do keep all of my newsletters bound, and if you have not bound your newsletters, you're welcome to go up on our internet site and pull them down and bind them. I think that it's important to have them and have them readily available. And, you know, certainly, but August of 2005, pull that down. You go to RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And to pull down that newsletter, in fact, we have the letter that President Ahmadinejad sent to President Bush. We did that, of course. Our latest newsletter, that was last month, I guess that was the July newsletter, was going into the background, Is America a Christian Nation? And there we reproduced for our listeners the complete text of the case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States from 1892, where the Supreme Court voted unanimously in favor of this decision that said America is a Christian nation. How can they say America is a Christian nation? Why is America a Christian nation? Well, let me suggest that you get that newsletter and read it, and I think you'll feel very proud to be an American after reading it. We have a wonderful heritage that is being stolen from us by the people within the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and this small group of elite. Now, there's really not that many of them, a few thousand, but they control the wealth of this country, both political parties, the media, and, of course, when you understand that behind this are the dark spiritual forces which have always energized the movement towards the New World Order and the New World Religion, then things really begin to make sense. So we do hope that many of you, of course, will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and pull down our material. Now, we do have a great new book. It is actually put out by our good friend, Pastor Chuck Baldwin. It's called The documents of freedom are the freedom documents. And it is the 50 documents that make up the basis of America, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, Washington's farewell address, the Mayflower Compact, the Declaration of Independence of the state of Texas, and so many documents that you're always looking for. You can never put your hand on them. And Chuck has put them together into one beautifully bound volume, and it's about 2 inches thick. He did a very, very nice job on it. It's easy to read, easy to copy. But, you know, you always want to have these things on hand. You want to understand what America was about. America was the fulfillment of man's dream to be free. And what was the essence of our freedom? Why, that our freedom came from God, and governments were instituted among men to preserve those God-given freedoms. And we were to be ruled by God, not by government. I mean, government was not to have anything to do with God. The only thing that was to do was to limit the power of government so men could be free. As of course, as William Penn had said so well, those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And so we would rule ourselves if we did not have a government that was regulating every aspect of human endeavor. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we've just got 3 minutes before we have to wrap up this first hour. We've got a great program scheduled for the next hour with Patrick Wood of the August Review, and we're going to be talking about this move towards the North American Union, which is simply one more arm of this whole movement towards the New World Order and the New World Religion. Well, let me just simply go on a little bit with our analogy between the war in Vietnam and what's going on today. And we pointed out how basically the financing for Vietnam really began in 46 and 47 when the massive military supplies on Okinawa were transferred, half of them were transferred to Ho Chi Minh so he could begin his war against the French so we could come in as the war there about 15, 14 years later in 1962 when we first began deploying troops there. And then, of course, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was used to justify taking American to Vietnam. It was totally fraudulent. Just as, well, what happened in 9-1-1? All you have to do is look, go up on the Internet and type in Building 7 videos and watch those Building 7 come down. It wasn't hit by a plane. Oh, they will tell us, oh, it was injured. Some things fell off buildings, the Twin Towers, and hit Building 7. Well, if that's true, then why did the base of the building explode? And why did it come down symmetrically? That was a controlled demolition. When you realize the enormity of that, you suddenly realize why the Bush administration did everything they could to block the initial investigation. That was a Joint Intelligence Committee investigation, which incidentally was headed by the two chairmen, Porter Goss and Bob Graham, both happened to be members of the Council on Foreign Relations, just by accident. And then the president insisted on censoring that report, and everything important was left out because I have a lot of the original testimony, and so much of the testimony was simply left out. We've got Mike calling from Brewster. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. I'm sure happy to get online to be able to speak to you and make a comment.
Okay, fine. We're just about out of time, but you go ahead.
Okay, I served in the Vietnam War in the Navy from 1961 through 1964, and I had observed some very, very strange things going on when I was over in the Far East. We made a couple of Westpac cruises there. Transshipment of raw material and stuff in foreign ports from United States merchant ships, etc., that was transshipped to communist bloc countries at that time.
In other words, we were financing this whole thing.
Yes, sir. And I didn't really believe it because I was told this. I didn't really observe it.
Hold that thought for just a minute, Mike.
Sure.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Mike. We're just about out of time. But quickly tell us what you observed because I think it's so important.
I think the one thing that I did observe myself was when I was in the Merchant Marines as an able-bodied seaman. Do you remember Operation Handclasp?
I really don't.
It was when we used to send wheat over to needy countries over throughout the world.
Okay.
It was set in 110-pound sacks of rice.
Right.
I had occasion one time to be on a merchant ship in India where we were on the opposite side of a dock, a warehouse dock with a communist bloc ship. I think it was Russian. And what happened was they'd offload pallets of this wheat with the emblem Operation Handclasp, the hand shaking with the red, white, and blue shield as the background. And they would put it in the warehouse and put burlap sacks so that you wouldn't see the markings and transship it onto that communist block ship.
Right.
I observed that personally.
And I think that's so important. Then you realize we've financed communism since very inception, both in Russia and, of course, right here in the United States, beautifully covered in that book we carry called Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and, of course, in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Hey, Mike, we're out of time, but thanks very much for sharing that with us. And maybe next week on Open Line Wednesday, you can call in again and give us more of the information that, that you gleaned from actually being there firsthand. It's so difficult for the American people to believe. We financed the best enemy money could buy.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor.
God bless. Thanks so much. And, of course, the people who, of course, are thinking about what's going on now, who's financing the Al-Qaeda? About 10% of the fighters in Iraq are Al-Qaeda. Who's financing Pakistan? Who's financing Pakistan? Why, you are, ladies and gentlemen. You are. But, of course, we have to do that because we didn't finance them. Why the wicked Islamic terrorists would take over Afghanistan. We couldn't have that. So we got to finance Pakistan that's financing the Islamic terrorists. What's wrong with this story? Well, of course, you need to get our material we've written. We actually have some three pamphlets on Foreknowledge 111, going to the fact that we knew all about the coming attack on the World Trade Center before the 9-1-1 attack. And we give you the sources of documentation. And if you doubt anything we say, why, we've always got the documents for you. And, of course, the three pamphlets are inexpensive. Foreknowledge 9-1-1. And then, of course, we carry the video in plain sight. We carry the video The Day That Changed the World Forever. And there you'll see Senator Gary Hart testifying or talking before a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. on September 14th. And this is just 3 days after the 9-1-1 attack. And Gary Hart, you'll actually hear him say, you know, this incident may give the president the opportunity to do what his father talked about only on one occasion, and that is create a new world order. And that must be important because if you get the transcript from the CFR website, which I have, they deleted that part of what Gary Hart said. I wonder why. In other words, they are rewriting history because they don't want you to understand that everything was planned ahead of time. And are going into Afghanistan and Iraq and now into Iran. It isn't about oil. It's not about Zionism. It's not about Israel. It's about bringing about this one world government. It's about promoting World War III down the line with such horror that the American people will gladly accept the world government as long as our leaders promise to keep us safe and prevent any more of this terrible carnage that is going to occur here. And I'm firmly convinced that we're going to see in America what I saw in Germany after the Second World War, and that is many of the cities in ruins. But you see, this is what happens to a nation that turns against God. And Germany turned against God during the time of Adolf Hitler, and America has turned against God today. So, of course, remember, of course, we're having our annual seminar. It's going to be held on the 29th of October. That's the 29th of October. We hope that many of you will make arrangements to come and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, the 29th of October. You'll want to get our books, Brotherhood of Darkness. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs 3 hours a day there on the Internet and 2 hours a day on the other networks we're on. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course our guest this evening is Patrick Wood. From the August Review, and Patrick's been around for many years. He wrote a book back in the 1970s. It was the 1970s, wasn't it, Patrick?
Yes, it was, Dr. Stan.
What year was that you wrote? Was that Trilaterals Over Washington?
It was Trilaterals Over Washington, Volumes 1 and 2. We wrote the books pretty much back-to-back between 78 and 81.
All right, fine. And of course, maybe for our listeners out there who really don't know what the Trilateral Commission is, could you tell us a little bit about that before we get into this latest article that you've written about the North Atlantic Union, which really is what this is all about, is the destruction of our sovereignty. But what does the Trilateral Commission have to do with that? What is the Trilateral Commission?
Well, the Trilateral Commission was a group of mostly private citizens from North America, Japan, and Europe, who were brought together by Zbigniew Brzezinski, an academic, and David Rockefeller, a financier. And these two founded the organization, chose its initial members, and it was really the first truly international globalist organization that that set about as its primary task the creation of a new economic international economic order. And although back then they refused to admit any political aspirations, one of the very first things they did was to enter into politics and create a hammerlock on the executive branch of the United States government, from which they've used that as a springboard to carry out their goals for a new international economic order.
And I thought the point you brought out so well in your treatise was that, you know, they were organized in 73, and 76 they put their candidates in the presidency, and that was Jimmy Carter, who was a member of the Trilateral Commission, and then during the Reagan administration, why, the number two man there, George Herbert Walker Bush, was a member of the Trilateral Commission. He pretty well ran things, and then, of course, he became the president in 88, and then he was succeeded by Bill Clinton, who was a member of the Trilateral Commission, and now, of course, though George W. Bush is not a member, his vice president and the vice president's wife are part of this select little group of a few hundred people who belong to the Trilateral Commission. That was really so well put.
Well, it's statistically impossible to deny the link, Dr. Stan, because there's the North American contingent, or actually the U.S. contingent of the Trilateral Commission, ranges anywhere from originally from about 80 people to about 120 people at any given time. And to think that 100 individuals, roughly, over a period of 25 years, could launch themselves into either the presidency or vice presidency of consecutive administrations, the odds of that are just so astronomical, it'd be like winning the lottery 10 times in a row.
Well, I suppose when you got as much money as David Rockefeller does,
you don't
even need to leave to win the lottery because you've already won it.
Well, they did pretty well with that, I have to say, because they have captured the executive branch of the of our government.
But that is exactly what Barry Goldwater said in his book, For No Apology.
Exactly.
He said they want to control the commercial and financial interests of the world by first gaining control of the American government.
Exactly.
Barry Goldwater said that in his book, With No Apologies, You Need to Get It, or we have that quoted, I think, in my March or May newsletter this year. And they control our government. And you go to the polls every 4 years. You don't vote for the candidate of your choice. You vote for the candidate of the choice of this 120 men who determine the future of our nation and are leading us into a war in Iran and what I fear is the Third World War, but don't you worry. They're going to control both sides as they really, of course, lead to terrible chaos throughout the world. Well, go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, exactly. And I want to say, Dr. Stan, too, the next conclusion from from having one-third of the members from North America is that the other two-thirds are from other countries other than the United States. And the question needs to be asked, how much influence do these other, high-level political slash corporate interests in other countries have on the policies that are set by the Trilateral Commission and then which are acted out in the U.S. government? Professor Sutton and I hammered on this from the very beginning of our work on the Trilateral Commission, in that we know these people behind closed doors, no press is allowed into their meetings and stuff that they have, behind closed doors, they discuss policies which affect all of the nations involved, and they set policies that are then taken back into the respective governments. Well, it seems to me that that's a definite end run around American sovereignty. We have foreigners that have a direct impact on the policy in our own country. That's hardly democratic. It's hardly constitutional. In fact, it's an absolute outrage.
Well, of course, that's why our founding fathers did not want a democracy. They wanted a republic where you had a nation of law, where the power of the government over the lives of the people was to be restricted, and you could never have any clique that would gain control of our government. And these people have done an end run around the Constitution, and a small clique controls both political parties and makes mockery of our Constitution. They've
exactly
done an end run around it. It's exactly as a member of the Trilateral Commission, Richard Gardner wrote in 1974 in Foreign Affairs magazine, April of 74, about doing an end run around the Constitution.
That's right, and it was a very pointed article. It was astounding to read it for the first time, where he absolutely admitted that what was necessary to move the globalization process ahead was an end run around national sovereignty. That's a quote, exact quote. He said that it would be eroded piece by piece, and that it would accomplish more than the old-fashioned frontal assault.
And, of course, you talked about a buzzing and a confusion, and don't you think there's really planned confusion out there? What do you have that exact quotation handy?
Well, yes, I do. I'll just read it from the beginning here. It said, and this is a direct quote from the article, from his article, 1974, The Hard Road to World Order.
I'm going to ask you to hold that because we're going to have to bring all of our stations back on board, and I want them to hear the entire text of what this article said. Now, we can't give you the whole thing, but it comes from the April 1974 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, The Hard Road to World Order. We'll be back in just a moment with Patrick Wood. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Patrick Wood of the August Review, and certainly one of my favorite guests. And Patrick is talking about an article that was written by a member of the Trilateral Commission back in 1974, a year after the Trilateral Commission was formed by Zygmunt Brzezinski at the behest of the multi-billionaire David Rockefeller, whose fortune dwarfs that of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. Anybody who believes they're the two richest men in America has been listening to Rush Limbaugh for too long. But be that as it may, basically Richard Gardner writing in 1974, April of 74, in Foreign Affairs magazine, which is read by the elite who rule America, who, incidentally, his logo is a man riding a white horse, a very, very reminiscent of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But what does Richard Gardner say in this article, the Hard Road to World Government? Is that the title?
This is exactly what he said. He said, in short, the House of World Order would have to be built from the bottom up rather than the top down. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, to use William James' famous description of reality, but an end run around national security, or that national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. This was the basis for which the Trilateral Commission was formed in the first place, was to take a different approach to achieve globalization. Previous approaches had failed flatly. The David Rockefellers of the world were stymied. They weren't making the forward progress they wanted to. They figured they needed to have another attack, and the policies they came up with, Brzezinski and Gardner included, were to create an end run around national sovereignty where they would erode it piece by piece, And this would be a more effective strategy than the what they considered the old-fashioned frontal assault.
And, of course, they talked in that article, as I remember, about how they were going to use treaties. They were going to use the Law of the Sea Treaty. They were going to use GATT, the General Agreement on Tariff and Trade. They were going to use the World Trade Organization. And using these treaties, they would gradually erode and destroy the sovereignty of the United States. And
well, here's the interesting thing, Dr. Stan. They ran into trouble with Congress with their treaty policy. And the way they got around that was in 1974. You remember that Gerald Ford acceded the presidency from Richard Nixon when he resigned. Nelson Rockefeller assumed the position of vice president at that time. And between the two of them, they were able to sponsor legislation in the Senate that allowed them to that Congress gave up power to negotiate treaties. They established a so-called fast-track process of legislation that allowed the president to go out and negotiate trade agreements, not treaties, but agreements, that would be brought back to Congress and voted on a straight up-or-down basis with virtually no debate whatsoever and no public involvement. It previously had been Congress's role to not only negotiate, but they had to pass the treaty by two-thirds vote. This fast-track legislation made a shambles of that policy, and basically the executive branch more or less conned the Congress into giving up those responsibilities to the executive branch. So we have only a few treaties that were actually executed, or agreements that were executed under fast-track legislation. One of those treaties was NAFTA. Another one was the passage of CAFTA a year ago by President Bush. But NAFTA has been clearly a trilateral creation from the very beginning, and they did it outside of the normal constitutional process of negotiating treaties.
And, of course, neither Gerald Ford nor Nelson Rockefeller were elected. Gerald Ford was never elected president. He was appointed vice president, and then when they got rid of Nixon, which was all planned, why, of course, then Ford came in. Now, basically, I believe Nelson Rockefeller was to have become the president, and when Nixon didn't do that, why, he certainly assured his own destruction politically, and they were out to get him because he did not put in Nelson Rockefeller as vice president. Nixon knew if he did that, they'd get him. Well, they got him anyway. And, of course, Nixon wasn't just paranoid. They really were out to get him. But I think it's what the interesting thing is. What they wanted to do was take away any debate. They did not. They knew the American people wanted to keep their sovereignty. The American people want to keep their freedom. The American people don't want to do away with their Constitution. But the elite do, because they have a different worldview. So you picked the story up there.
Yes, indeed. Well, just looking back historically, the first major test that the trilaterals had with the Congress and with the American people was the giveaway of the Panama Canal in 1976 by Jimmy Carter. The treaty or the giveaway agreement was negotiated by a trilateral commission member by the name of Saul Linowitz. The executive director of the CFR-sponsored task force called the Linowitz Commission, that task force had an executive director by the name of Robert A. Pastor, who comes into very important play when we start talking about the North American Union later. But that was the first test of wills between the public and the likes of the Trilateral Commission attempting to fashion a new international economic order. The Panama Canal was negotiated away to a communist dictatorship, clearly so that there would be a source of revenue available to that government to pay the defaulting loans that were made by New York Bank, mostly by New York bankers. There were some European banks involved as well. But that was the first major test of going against the will of the people in modern history.
And, of course, both ends of the Panama Canal are now controlled by Hutchinson Lampoa, which is a country that's owned by people very, very close to the Chinese military dictatorship. So we've given them control of our canal. And this was done by Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter. But really, he was simply a figurehead for his national security advisor. And who was that? why, of course, Zygmunt Brzezinski was David Rockefeller's man.
Exactly
so,
right.
And this
exactly
whole
right
thing is really being coordinated by the Rockefeller family. And as David Rockefeller says in his memoirs, you know, some people accuse us, the Rockefeller family, of being involved in a cabal that is conspiring to bring about a new international order. And if that is the charge, I stand guilty. I am a proud internationalist. And what he should have said was, I am a traitor to America. I want to destroy this nation. I want to create a new international economic order where, of course, freedom, as you've known, will simply be forgotten. And you'll be so happy with all the materialism, you won't realize that you've lost the very essence of what America's about. And these people of great wealth do not believe in America because, of course, as you've read my material, you'll realize that they're energized by a different spiritual force. So pick up the story there, Patrick.
Well, exactly. And the entire policy from day one, from 1973, to create a new international economic order wound its way through history. This is certainly the simplified version, but it's about trade, it's about money. It wound its way through history by manifesting itself through the so-called General Agreement on Tariff and Trade, the GATT, through NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, through CAFTA recently, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, through the FTAA, the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, and
don't forget the WTO.
Well, that was the last thing I was going to say. Lastly, the World Trade Organization is all about money. And what's happened in the end, initially we interacted with foreign countries by negotiations conducted by the Congress to create treaties. And then we came the age of the agreement where agreements were made by the executive branch and submitted to the Congress for approval, but on a 50% majority basis. And now what's happened is those policies have been completely removed, and now the way the executive branch is dealing with foreign countries is by regulations. In other words, they're just summarily creating regulations. Now, witness, for instance, the Security and Prosperity Agreement that we've been talking about, explaining the North American Union. Regulations are simply being changed to accommodate, I say simply, whatever reason the administration thinks that it has the right to do this, I'm not really sure, but they're simply just changing regulations to fit the international model that they're choosing to adopt. And Congress, at this point, our Senate and our Congress, are not even in an advice and consent role. They've been completely shoved off to the side, they're by and large not even aware of what the executive branch of our government is doing right now. It's a very serious situation.
And I think the average American is not knowledgeable, but there is an elite. They have an agenda. They believe in an authoritarian society with themselves in control, but they want to use the facade of a democracy. And you go to the polls and you elect your elected representatives, who they control, who they buy, who they finance. As I always like to say, we have in Washington, D.C. today the finest legislators that money could buy, and so much of that money comes from people affiliated with the Trilateral Commission. That, of course, is subsidiary organizations like the Bilderbergers and the CFR.
Yes, and it should be noted too, just for people who have been conditioned to think that the CFR is really in control of the global elite or whatever. One should realize that the Trilateral Commission has completely hijacked whatever remained of the CFR, to where members of the Trilateral Commission just completely dominate the CFR. They dominate the board of directors, they dominate the executive branch, and they also dominate the policy studies that are being written and the task force that are being created.
I was so interested. You pointed out that Richard Haass, who today is the president of the CFR, just also happens to be a member of the Trilateral Commission. Isn't that a coincidence?
Exactly right. And 40% of their directors are also members of the Trilateral Commission. Yeah. That's way out of proportion, considering that, again, that the Trilateral Commission only has about 120 U.S. members, where the Council on Foreign Relations now ranges somewhere 3,500 plus people.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, our guest is Patrick Wood, and we're talking about the power elite that rules America, and the average American will never be told this, and the reason you will never hear this on the major media is because they control the major media. There is a book we carry called The New Media Monopoly, pointing out that five mega corporations control between 90 and 95% of the major media, and there's only, of course, the Internet and a few independent Christian stations around that really are going to get you the truth, but most of the major stations and networks are owned by these very people, and they've infiltrated the religious organizations, infiltrated the conservative and the liberal organizations. They control both sides of most discussions. They ultimately control, eventually, what the American people think. And that's why, of course, we do what we do, and why Patrick does what he does. So pick up the story there, Patrick.
Well, gosh, that's a hard story to pick up. We continue to do what we do because the truth is the truth, and the truth must be told. What these folks have done to us is clearly a scam, in the sense that they have figured out how to stick their giant proboscis into our treasury and into our national wealth, and they figured out how to drain us of the financial blood that has made America great in the first place. It's just an absolute scam.
In fact, it's so interesting that Paul Volcker, who was the director of the Federal Reserve Board, came from the Trilateral Commission right after, of course, it was formed. And then the man who replaced him was Alan Greenspan, who came from the Trilateral Commission, and he held sway there for 18 years. And so they really have destroyed the value of our currency. Of course, by destroying the value of our currency, they destroy the stability of our society and will make us all dependent upon them.
Exactly. And, it's the extent to which our national wealth has been depleted in the last 15 years, especially, is staggering. It's great. We have lost more wealth than probably any 100 countries in the world ever had collectively. And by that I mean, for instance, just one statistic. In the last 10 years, we have lost $3 trillion worth of prime U.S. assets, companies, manufacturing companies, et cetera, that have been bought up by foreign investments, by foreign interests. And these are our manufacturing industries, our service industries. We have been bought out from the outside in to where, you know, the people of our country have virtually just nothing left to look at and say, that's our country. We used to look at General Motors. We used to look at Ford. We used to look at National Steel and U.S. Steel. These were American-born companies that made America great. All of these countries, those that are still in existence, are now owned by somebody outside the United States. The profits do not go to Americans anymore. They go to somebody outside the United States. And this has happened with industries. It's happened with labor forces, where jobs have been outsourced into cheaper labor markets like Mexico and India, and even into Russia. And America has been gutted from the inside. There was an article recently by Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, actually it was last November of 2005. Professor Kotlikoff writes for the St. Louis Federal Reserve, and he wrote an article declaring flatly that the United States is bankrupt. This is an incredible article, but he states flatly the United States is bankrupt.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Patrick is talking about an article that was written by Professor Kotlikoff, who writes for the St. Louis branch of the Federal Reserve System, and this article, which was written, I guess, late last year, says the United States is bankrupt, and he really is right. Today, we are having to borrow $3 billion a day, almost $1 trillion a year from other countries, just, of course, to pay our debts. And that is how the Trilateral Commission intends to bankrupt America. They will bankrupt America. They will destroy the value of your savings and the value of your certainly your pension fund, the value of your CDs and your annuities. And, of course, when you're penniless, why, you'll turn to them grateful for anything they will give you. And that's how we will lose our frequency, by destroying our currency, and it is the trilateralists, the Paul Volckers and, of course, the Alan Greenspans, who've done this intentionally. It didn't happen by accident. They're very smart people. They know how to enslave a people by destroying everything that they have, destroying their wealth.
That's right. And this particular form of capitalism, if you could call it that, that they're practicing, by the time it gets to the stage that it is now, it's kind of like being addicted to dope in a way. They have to have more and more and more. And when there's no more left, they have to start taking away muscle tissue. You know, when the fat's all gone, they start eating the muscle. And this is exactly what's happened to America. They have figured out that they need to take whatever remains of our national wealth and stuff as much of it as they can in their pocket before they just leave us like a smoldering carcass after a fire in the woods or something. That's just about where we are now. We're bankrupt, but remember, the interest that's being paid on the national debt is being paid by and large to the bankers and the foreign interest who hold these all this debt. So it's not just that we're getting messed over with it, but remember the United States can't ever pay that debt, but the interest that we're still paying, the billions of dollars a day, are going to the same people who loaned us the money in the first place on purpose.
And money they created out of nothing simply by a bank entry.
That's right. So they continue to get rich. See, they continue to milk us even while we're in a complete state of bankruptcy. It's absolutely astounding. And my guess is within probably, 2 to 3 years, our currency, our economy and stuff is in tremendous risk of total collapse. There's just nothing left to underpin it, to help it pull out this last time.
And, of course, as we go into this war in the Middle East, for no reason at all other than the fact that this is the plan. And, of course, remember, we brought the Ayatollahs to power in Iran back in 1979. Didn't make any sense at the time.
Excuse me, remember Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, right.
He was the man in the middle of that deposed the Shah along with Henry Kissinger and encouraged and turned over Iran to the Ayatollahs.
And now we're going to have to go to war because they're such terrible people.
That's right.
And people have such short memories, Patrick. They don't understand that it's almost as if everything is following some sort of a cosmic script, drawing us towards the destruction of America and the bankrupting of America. And, of course, all you need to do is read what Cicero said back, 2,100 years ago. He said, the budget should be balanced. Public spending should be limited. The arrogance of officials should be reduced, and certainly the lending to foreign countries should be stopped, lest Rome become bankrupt. And Rome did become bankrupt, and Rome ceased to be a republic and became a dictatorship.
Exactly.
And the same thing has happened in Spain. It's happened in country after country. It's happening in America today. And where are the voices from our politicians warning us and our church leaders and our political leaders? Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, they're out to lunch, quite frankly. I think probably we should make note that America, the United States in particular, the United States is the last country in the world that could stand in opposition to the global elite who have already pretty much taken over the rest of the world. For instance, the European Union is in Europe. There's a consortium in the Middle East. The forces in Asia are beginning to come together under these same people. The United States is the only free country where the people of the country pose a particular problem to the global elite. And I personally believe this is one reason that we have been targeted for extinction, because we are the last people on earth that could do anything to stop these people. They've already got the rest of the world under their control and pretty much could do anything they want.
And they have run our government is financing dictatorships throughout the world.
Exactly. They have no problem working with dictators. They're easy to negotiate with.
Right.
You only have one person to talk to.
But of course, the future of the world will hang at the balance of what happens here in America. This is why I'm here.
That's right. And what happens with America?
In America, the whole of Christian civilization is lost.
Yes.
And believe me, we're very close to that. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Well, Patrick, let's get to the North American Union, or this rebuilding in North American community. These ideas of Robert Pastor, this idea of simply doing away with American sovereignty and joining us together with Mexico and Canada, where does this fit into the picture?
Well, I think probably we should start with Dr. Robert Pastor, just to lay a little bit of groundwork. Robert Pastor is already being recognized as the father of the North American Union. This man is similar in stature and in policy to Zbigniew Brzezinski back in the early 1970s and 60s. And Dr. Pastor, who is a professor at American University, is the most outspoken advocate for the North American Union in the world today. He is not a member of the Trilateral Commission, but he has been involved with members of the Trilateral Commission since the early 1970s when he began his career. And Dr. Pastor is calling for the merger of the United States, Mexico, and Canada into one single entity called the North American Union. This was a policy that was set that caused the meeting in 2005 of the heads of state of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico to create the so-called Security and Prosperity Partnership that has spawned agencies or agency designations within each country. In the United States, under the Commerce Department, we have the Security and Prosperity Partnership Task Force, which has a website, spp.gov, and they are working hard, in secret by and large, I might add. They're working hard to create the framework to merge our three countries together under one common umbrella that will allow the movement of trade, people, and money between the three countries with essentially erased borders. They're talking about having a common external border, which they call the security perimeter, that we would supposedly jointly move to protect ourselves from foreign incursion. And every bit of this is so ludicrous to the common man on the street that it just boggles the mind. You know, how would we turn over our national security, for instance, to Mexico to say, well, you guard all your borders and we'll guard our borders and somehow we're all going to be more secure than we ever were before? It's absolute nonsense. Mexico is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. The police force is corrupt. The government is corrupt. Their national security is a joke, and it will always be a joke. And heaven forbid we take it over and pour what little money we have left in our treasury into Mexico trying to improve it. Yet this is the plan for America.
Our guest this evening is Patrick Wood, and of course we're talking about the Security and Prosperity Partnership and the fact that in March of 2005, why, Paul Martin of Canada, George Bush, and of course Vicente Fox had a meeting in Texas, Waco, Texas, and they agreed to form this North American Partnership. And out of that came the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And 2 months later, the Council on Foreign Relations, of all people, published a book called Building a North American Community and really laid out the plan for the loss of American sovereignty as we begin to merge these three nations together. But we can't tell the American people what's going on because most of these foolish people, they don't understand that we've got to give up our freedom, we've got to give up our sovereignty. The masters, the elite, the Trilateral Commission and the people who control them and the spirits of forces behind them have a different plan for the end of America as we know it, the end of our sovereignty, and merging into this North American Union. So you pick up the story there, Patrick.
Well, this is where we are now. Dr. Pastor has declared a target date of 2010, that is 2010, for the initial implementation of the North American Union. He has proposed a common currency be designed for the three region that would be initially a common trade currency for businesses to conduct business with. There might still be internal currencies for a time, but the idea eventually is to completely replace the currencies of each country with a single region-wide currency.
Not like they have in Europe, where they have a euro, and what are they going to call it here?
They're going to call it the Amaro here. That's the name that's been proposed. Of course, it could be called anything, but, you know, the name that's been kicked about so far is the Amaro. And this currency would be a newly architected currency. It likely would be a fiat currency, and it likely would degrade the currency that we have in our pockets right now significantly in order to get us into that currency. All that having been said, Pastor's ultimate goal is to create a model here similar to the European Union in Europe, where there is a supranational governing body that controls the regulations and the legal infrastructure between the three regions. In other words, our regulations and laws would be melded and molded and melted into the laws and regulations of Canada and of Mexico. And when one considers the implications of this, it's the scariest thing it's scarier than anything that ever played on the silver screen, let me put it that way, that we would be merged into the regulations of these other two countries.
And, of course, could you explain what the Security and Prosperity Partnership is, where people can get the truth about it, the fact that the Commerce Department is already trying to diffuse the awareness of the American people by putting up a statement on their website at spp.gov that says facts and fiction. Why, of course, it's all fiction. We're trying to give up sovereignty. It's all fiction that we're a secret movement. Why don't you tell the story about this whole thing? They've got a website. The various study groups are meeting secretly. Nobody who knows what they're doing. Nobody knows who's on them. But we're paying for it. But we can't let the American people know that. But it's not secret at all. We just can't let the American people know.
Well, it's just been visible enough to where we can get a beat on them. But they haven't coughed up any significant information yet as to actually what they're actually doing. But they have the SPP.gov executive director, a woman by the name of Jerry Word, has chosen to not really release anything about what the task force are doing at this point, even though Freedom of Information Act requests have been made. They're dragging their feet on it, and maybe they figure they're just going to do it, and by the time they get anything out, it'll be too late. But the SPP.gov group, if you will, under the Department of Commerce, they did put up a myth versus reality, myth versus fact section on their web page in response to critics like us, who have realized that it was Pastor's policy that created them in the first place that's calling for a North American Union. However, from their point of view, what they declare is a myth are things like, this is directly from their website, they say it's a myth that the SPP infringes on the sovereignty of the United States. That's a myth. They say it's a myth that the SPP is illegal and violates the Constitution. They say it's a myth that the SPP will cost U.S. taxpayers money. That's a real joke. They say it's a myth that the SPP will result in the loss of American jobs. And they say it's a myth that the SPP will harm our quality of life. That's just a sampling of some of the things that they're saying is a myth. And, of course, they give the fact of the matter, which, you know, basically just insults us and says, if you weren't so ignorant and stupid, you'd understand what we're doing is good for you.
In other words, we are the elite, and we know what's good for you, common people. They told us that CAFTA was going to be so wonderful for us. It was going to give us all these new jobs. And, of course, anybody who did lose their job, they'd be trained to another better job, you know, the nanotechnology or computer technology or... But, of course, look what they told us and look and see what's really happened. They simply lied. People are lying because they do not want the American people to know that the elite want to destroy our sovereignty. That's always been the plan. And that's what David Rockefeller said when NAFTA went through. He said, we've been waiting for 500 years to reunite America.
Yes. The stated purpose of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, this is straight from their website, is a three-point charter, if you will. Number one, improve productivity. Number two, reduce the cost of trade. And number three, enhance the quality of life. Those are the three target goals, or whatever you call it, of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. All of those say nothing about how it would be accomplished, and basically it's just kind of like the warm, fuzzy feeling that, you know, that you get when you read some, you know, a marketing slogan or something from, you know, from some big company. I remember Coke had a program one time, a marketing campaign for a year, and the slogan of the year was, they put it in all their advertising, Coke is it. That was it. That's what it said. Coke is it. Well, what does it mean, Coke is it? Well, it means nothing, but that was their marketing campaign. It was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard in my life. And this is exactly like that marketing campaign that Coke had some 25 years ago. They want to improve productivity, reduce the cost of trade, and enhance the quality of life. Yet, they offer zero specifics on how they're going to do this, nor will even tell us who are working on these task force who are bringing all this stuff about.
Well, of course, they actually, what they're really trying to do is away with national sovereignty, and of course, open up our borders, and of course, you begin to unite our police, and of course, all the administrations of the three nations. Isn't that pretty well what it's about?
It is, and I'll say right now, I have to say that Texas is the battleground right now that everybody needs to keep their eyes on. Texas is going to be up in arms. Actually, a lot of them already are. But in Texas, there's a tremendous battle going on as the construction seeks to begin on the NAFTA superhighway that will connect southern Mexico, the ports in southern Mexico, with Kansas City, where rail traffic and truck traffic will go directly through our border without stopping from Mexico into our heartland of our country to be distributed to other points in Canada and the United States. And where trade in America, ostensibly, will also pass through our borders going south with no checks on the Mexican side, straight down to the ports in southern Mexico, which, oh, by the way, are controlled by Hutchison Whampoa as well. And the North American Super Corridor begins its construction in Texas first. If it makes it through Texas, there will be no other state that's able to stop it in the United States. And the people in Texas, the citizens of Texas right now, are up in arms over what their governor down there, Governor Perry, is trying to force this super corridor down their throat. And essentially, it's going to put a 600-yard-wide swath of freeways and pipelines and, you know, power poles straight through the heart of Texas, taking some 650,000 acres away from citizens of Texas via eminent domain to build this superhighway. That, by the way, won't even be owned, at least great portion of it, will be owned by a Spanish company by the name of Cintra, and it will be a toll road where we have to pay to drive on the road that's being ripped away, the land of which being ripped away from Texas citizens. It's an absolutely critical battle, Dr. Stan.
And I think it's so interesting that the governor of Texas up for election, he's pushing this thing, and let's hope he gets retired and we get somebody in there who won't go along with this agenda, because, see, this is not being talked about across America.
No, it's not.
Jerome Corsi and certainly Bill Schlafly and yourself, the average American would not know what's going on. But this is all being done secretly or stealthily. But, you know, you're not hearing this discussed on the major media, but you're hearing it on the alternative media. And more people throughout Texas and more people throughout the United States are learning about this NAFTA superhighway. It's almost a third of a mile wide, and it's really going to be a phenomenal production. But it's going to connect, you know, certainly southern Mexico to Kansas City, right on into Canada. It will allow them to bring in there all these manufactured goods from communist China, bypassing the ports on the east and west coasts, bypassing our Teamsters Union to break the backs of the union, to break the backs of our industries here, and we'll have lots of material things. We just won't have much money to buy them with. Because they plan to redistribute the wealth to the American people. And if you doubt that, ladies and gentlemen, you need to read the Earth Charter. You can get it on the Internet. You can get it from Radio Liberty and our tsunami, coming tsunami syllabus or sustainable syllabus. Or we'll send you free of charge a copy of the Earth Charter. If you can't get it off the Internet, understand there is a master plan. It was written by by Stephen Rockefeller, Nelson Rockefeller's son, by Gorbachev, the head of the Soviet Union, the cruel and ruthless dictator for many years, and by Marie Strong, as a multi-billionaire, who is deeply involved in the occult. In fact, all of these men are involved in the occult. And point 10A, they talk about redistributing, or I think the equitable distribution is the term they use, of wealth within nations and between nations. How are we going to have equitable distribution of wealth between the United States and Canada, United States and Mexico? Are they going to send money to the United States from Mexico, or do you think they're going to send the wealth of the American people to the poor peasants in Mexico?
Yeah, exactly right. What's happened, of course, water always seeks its lowest level. What has happened in all the areas where the Mexican invasion has been allowed to continue, where it's really heavy, like in the Los Angeles area and some areas in Arizona, some areas in Texas, the places that have been infiltrated where the wave of immigration has displaced people who were living there, poverty has followed that invasion. And crime, I might add as well. Crime sprees and poverty have followed that invasion because they're simply coming here to do the same things they did there. And it results in poverty. And so as the wave comes further north, if it's allowed to continue, the wave of poverty, the wave of crime that's been sweeping up, essentially is going to degrade our entire country if it's allowed to continue.
I agree with you totally, and the average American has no idea what's going on.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are, starting to wake up now, and they see how many illegal aliens there are in their community. They hear anecdotal reports of people who are losing jobs because they got displaced by some illegal worker. Some people are starting to think something's wrong with this picture.
Now, of course, the thing is, it's all planned. They're encouraging the illegal immigration. They're encouraging this whole thing because they want to impoverish the American people. Before we go on, Patrick, I want you to get your webpage out a couple of times and how people can get in touch with the August Review. And if you have not yet read this article, it's excellent. It's the latest one that's posted there. How can people get hold of you?
Get on your email list. People can simply come to our website, www.augustreview.com. It's August like the month, and then the word review, R-E-V-I-E-W.com. And they'll see a link for the latest report toward a North American Union at the top of our homepage. There's plenty of other articles there, though, that are just as critical as this one, I have to say. Every report we put up, we try to pick the topics that we really believe are cutting-edge topics. So this one right now is certainly a cutting-edge topic. It's what needs to be focused on right now. But we also had an article recently report on the final demise of national security. That's something that's of interest to every American as well. The rest of the articles and so on, the major reports that we have on our site, they all deal with the subject of globalization and how this con job is being pulled off on all the nations of the world. And we need to remember that globalization is a global phenomenon. It's not just here. They're doing it to everywhere. All the other countries in the world right now are rising up basically against they're viewing globalization as being an American process. It's really not. It's a global process. It just happens that the David Rockefellers of the world came from the United States. But the U.S. has taken a bad rap in a lot of foreign governments where they view the globalization process as being inherently American. It certainly is not inherently American at all. It's been hijacked. If there ever was a natural process of globalization, that process has been completely hijacked by members of the Trilateral Commission plus a few more.
And that's, of course, why Hugo Chavez was able to get up at the United Nations and say, the President of the United States is the devil. And he got a standing ovation at the end. Why? Because nobody wants to give up their freedom. Nations throughout the world don't want to give up their sovereignty. But they're using, and I'm talking about the trilateralists, they're using the financial and military power of the United States to force other nations to give up their sovereignty and join in this one world order and the new world religion, which is being pushed by the elitists who think that they're so much smarter than the rest of us. They know it's best for the world. How could 300 men do this by themselves? I believe that there are spiritual forces, spiritual energies that are driving this whole movement and destroying what was once a great and noble Christian nation, the United States of America. What are your thoughts on that, Patrick?
Well, I completely agree with you, Dr. Stan, and the only possible Judeo-Christian view that one can take of this is that there are forces behind there. In other words, if there is a conspiracy, it's a spiritual conspiracy that's manifesting itself in human in human activity. And that's not to say that all of, members of the trial commission are demon-possessed or anything. I'm not suggesting that at all. But they are certainly seemingly being led down a path that is leading to the enslavement of mankind. And as I said before, the United States is the last bastion of freedom in the world that they can deal with, and I think that's why we have been targeted for extinction right now.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, Patrick, that was very well said. Go ahead, and you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, good. I think probably, what Americans need to understand is that America is to the rest of the world what the Alamo was to Texas. And we may be militarily impoverished, if you will, as the Alamo was during its famous fight in Texas against Mexico. They were overrun, ultimately. But the memory of the Alamo was, and then, of course, the mystique of the Alamo was, that men fought to the death to give their life for freedom. And we in America are surrounded by hostile forces seeking to end freedom in the world. And we're very much in the same position right now as a country that the Alamo once was, as a little spot of real estate down in San Antonio, Texas. And what we do at this point will determine history for this country. What we do in the next 2 to 3 years will determine what happens to our country permanently. We may not have the freedoms after 2010. If we haven't dealt with these issues by 2010, which is the target date for the North American Union to be implemented, we may not have to even worry about what we do in 2011. It's a pretty drastic situation.
Well, I like your analogy of the Alamo. The only trouble is that we've got some of Santayana's troops in there in positions of command of our military, so we're in real trouble. We're not only fighting the people outside the Alamo, we're fighting the people in positions of power within the Alamo.
Exactly right. And, of course, this is the greatest danger for any country. The enemy within has a greater ability to crumble a country than the enemy without.
And, of course, there are only a few people who really begin to recognize this, but Patrick's book, Trilateralists Over the Washington, is that still in print?
No, it's not, Dr. Stan. I'm hoping sometime it will be, but, remembering it's just a history book at this point, people aren't too interested in reading ancient history. It was ancient history from today. It was only 25 years ago, but people want to know what's going on right now rather than what happened 25 years ago.
But you can't understand, of course, what's going on today unless you understand the past. As
I know, it's
George
true.
Santayana said, those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it.
Exactly.
And I think it's so vitally important that your message gets out. Those people are still in positions of power, people don't understand the fact that they control the executive branch of government, the legislative branch of government, the financial branch of government, and they control, of course, the Federal Reserve System, and they've led us to the tragic situation we're in today. And not one person in 1,000 really understands. We'll be right back.
Exactly.
Well, our guest has been Patrick Wood. Patrick, once again, get your website out, then we'll let you go.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's www.augustreview.com. Everybody's welcome to come. There's no charge to read our material. Donations are always welcome, but we want people to take our material and spread it as far and wide as they possibly can.
And I recommend the material to you, Patrick. So one of that little group of patriots who's out there in the front lines working. God bless you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, of course, that was Patrick Wood. And, of course, if you really want to understand what's going on, you certainly would want to think about getting the book we're carrying, The Minutemen by Jerome Corsi, which goes into a lot of the things we're talking about tonight. That's The Minutemen. And then we're also carrying a book called Fighting Immigration Anarchy. We have a four-tape set on immigration. We have the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, written almost half a century ago, and yet it's a classic book about how our great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, are financing communism and socialism and this whole move towards world government. We actually carry the book, The Trilateralist, written by Professor Sutton after the original Trilateralist over Washington was written. We carry it's a DVD called The Conquest of Ashland, and how this whole movement is being funded by the Ford Foundation. And then, of course, we carry something which every American should have, and that's the Freedom Documents. It's all of the really important documents, all 50 of them. It's about 2 inches thick, nicely bound, put together by our good friend Pastor Chuck Baldwin. That's the Freedom Documents. You want to have them. You want to read them. You want to understand what America's about. And then, of course, you have to understand the enemy as well. And that, of course, are pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy. There are 3 pamphlets there. They're a compilation of my newsletters, but they're all convenient to have at your fingertips. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. All of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. The books again, The Minutemen, Fighting Immigration Anarchy, the 4-tape set on immigration, the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, the DVD, The Conquest of Ashland, the book The Freedom Documents, so important, and then my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, and the book by Professor Sutton, Trilateralists. So then, of course, we need to remind you about our special conference we're going to have on the 29th of October right here in the Monterey Bay area. And Constance Cumby and Chris Pinto and a number of excellent speakers are going to be there. We're going to serve lunch. And quite frankly, we need to know if you're going to be here. So why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you're coming from across America, give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a list of the hotels. And you've got about 8 or 9 days to get a special reduced rate of the Sea Cliff Inn. You're welcome to call around, see if you can do better. You can stay wherever you'd like to, but we'd love to see you there. Bring your friends. We need to get people educated right now. America has never been in greater jeopardy. We're moving towards a war, I believe, in Iran. Everything points in that direction. It's only a matter of time before more and more American boys will die. And of course, more and more the people in Iran and Iraq will die. We've already killed 100,000 in Iraq, and we're told it was just a little mistake. Too bad we just got faulty intelligence, but isn't it far better that we've liberated these people and brought them freedom? And, of course, there's total anarchy, civil war taking place there. They will not give our military enough men to do the job that needs to be done or the equipment to equip the Iraqi army. Do you think they're that really stupid unintentionally? No. There really are people who like carnage and horror and bloodshed and the destruction of human life. We're dealing with organized evil. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on becomes obvious. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to it on the Internet. And you can, of course, track how to get us on shortwave and satellite. So please then pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation. It is Wednesday, the 20th of September, 2006, and yes, it's spreading all across the land, all across the world, indeed. The very concept has finally taken hold. People all over the world, no matter what country they live in, all realize that they are all at a crossroads.